Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high and canvas covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Fidelia. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, down to Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Thank you very much, Audrey. Thanks. You get us on every week, and if the folks only knew how difficult that was, it's not easy, but it's going to get easier come July. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Jumble Justice Radio Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. I'm your host, Keith Haley. We want to thank Johnny Cash again for taking us on that trip across the United States, where he visits more than 90 cities and states in the country, and he's able to sing that song without looking at lyrics. So keep on trucking up there, Johnny, and we look forward to hearing that song each week. Emily and Mike, see you folks over there tonight. I know you've done some research for us this evening, and we're glad that you've done that, and hope we get to some of the things that you have tonight. We'll certainly try to do that. Let me mention something about tonight, a very special evening, I think. We're going to have a guest tonight who has done, experienced, written about, and forgotten more about immigration and illegal immigration and enforcement of our nation's security at the borders than most people that you will ever find. And that's Dr. Charles Smith, and I'll be telling you more about him tonight. But I did want to comment about Kevin Cavanaugh last week, Sergeant Kevin Cavanaugh from the Kettering Police Department, who was a master taser instructor. And what a great show that was. I got a lot of comments about the show. And I've talked to faculty in three different colleges and university that are using that segment that he produced on the show last week in their classes as a learning experience. So that's what we kind of say we're trying to do here. We like to think that, well, somebody said it. I think it was Mike Goldfish, but we're sort of the NPR of the criminal justice field. And I think that's a mark of distinction, but we're very pleased with how that show went last week. And then tonight, we return to immigration issues. We've done a couple shows on this before, but the subject just doesn't go away. And this week, at the end of the week, you're going to see a lot more going on about that bill. And I know some of you who are listening tonight have been tracking that legislation that seems to go away, and then it comes back, and it's back, and it looks like something's going to come about here in the next week or so. So we'll also get our guest's take on that, or his prognosis on what's going to happen with that immigration bill tonight. Let me mention just real quickly here what the purpose of our show is. We like to discuss the news, the issues and events and developments, and the always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. Our show is dedicated to all those tireless police, court, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and indeed throughout the world. Our agents are worldwide. We try to look inside the field of criminal justice practice and take a close-up look at its professionals. And last week and this week will be another good example of that. Let me mention something about Blog Talk Radio for those of you who are listening the first time and don't know much about it. It's a leading-edge technology, of course, and the CEO is Alan Livy. Got a letter from him this week, and everything is on schedule for their major upgrading and on the website and a lot of the technology that helps us produce the show for the month of July. So all is on schedule. He mentioned that in the month of May, there were over 1 million listeners worldwide on the network. So that is absolutely incredible. They're talking about monetizing. I guess that's a business term. Keep in mind you're listening to a guy that doesn't even keep a checkbook. But anyway, they're going to monetize the model, and I think that might go to a little bit of advertising. So instead of holding on to your radio, you know, for the whole show or your cell phone, you'll be able to take a break and go get a cup of coffee or whatever, with maybe a 2-minute commercial or something. We'll have to see how that works out. We now have over 1,700 guests or hosts on Blog Talk Radio, and the politics genre alone covers more than 150 topics. If you look at the Blog Talk Radio site, you'll see the names of many celebrities, entertainers, authorities in a number of fields, business executives, names that you will recognize. But here's what's possible with Blog Talk Radio. Any person, any interest group, anybody can have their own show, no matter what they're talking about, as long as it you know, passes some editing. They can have their own show. They can broadcast live and streaming audio over the Internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners, and it's absolutely free. And I always just compare this back to the time when I tried something like this in the 1990s, when the Internet was just starting to boom, and you could have 50 listeners, and most of the time that didn't work. And the shows are archived immediately, for either downloading or replay. So it's a great opportunity for folks out there listening who have something to say on a fairly regular basis, and you can do it on Blog Talk Radio. So go to Blog Talk Radio, the website, and sign up. You've heard me say it before, like that motto on the back of the Cheez-Its box, get your own box. Well, here you can get your own show. Keep looking at the site website, Blog Talk Radio, Jumble Justice Radio site, for upcoming shows. We've got some interesting things coming up in the month of July. Tonight we'll do what we usually do. We're going to have a little news segment here. I think we're going to bring our guest on. I think he's online now, if I can see that correctly on my switchboard, and maybe he can join us on some of this news. In fact, I was planning on that, and I've sort of focused on a couple of immigration items that he'll have great insights on. So here's what you do as a listener or a caller. You can call in by cell phone, by landline, by Skype, and you can hear the whole show on your phone, so you don't have to be listening on your computer with Windows Media Player. And then the call-in number is 347-996-5983. That's 347-996-5983. And what happens here at the switchboard, we can hold five calls or activate five calls at the same time, and we can all talk to each other and hear the show at the same time. So it makes for a very nice arrangement. Let me see if I can get our guest on here and ask that famous question that we always ask on Blog Talk Radio. Can you hear me? Hello.
Hello? Hello?
Dr. Williams?
Yes, sir.
Oh, good. We're glad you can join us. How's everything in, you're in North Texas, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. We're kind of wet, but...
Oh, that's there. Right. You're getting some water, haven't you?
Yes, quite a bit.
any of that bothered you particularly?
No. We needed it. We've had a severe drought.
Well, Charlie, you don't mind if I call you Charlie, right?
Oh, yes, sir. That's fine.
All right, Charlie, but Dr. Williams, one of the, I suppose, traditions we have on this Jumble Justice Radio show is Audrey. Of course, she's British, and she is a blonde. I want to point that out. But she's been a long-time collector of blonde jokes. So each week she brings us a blonde joke, and we listen to that, and we render some sort of judgment, and we always like them. If we didn't, we wouldn't tell her up front. But she has one tonight. Would you mind if we listen to that before we go?
I don't mind at all. I heard her dwarf joke, so I'm prepared.
Any blondes in your... If there are any blondes in your family, this is not mean to be, offensive. It's just one of Audrey's favorite things.
So yeah, there's a whole bunch of them, including two sisters.
I think I've noticed blondes in Texas, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Audrey, go ahead.
A young woman said to her doctor, "You have to help me. I hurt all over." "What do you mean?" said the doctor. The woman touched her right knee with her index finger and yelled, "Ow, that hurts." Then she touched her left cheek and again yelled, "Ouch, that hurts too." Then she touched her right earlobe. "Ow, even that hurts." The doctor asked the woman, "Are you a natural blonde?" "Why, yes," she said. "I thought so," said the doctor. "You have a sprained finger."
Our audience liked that one. Thank you, Audrey. And what is it you're wanting to ask me? You want to do it again? Oh, okay. I'll let you say it. Hold on a second here, Dr. Williams. Audrey has something to say.
Okay.
She need to comment on one of these cases that's been going on in the media that's just been incessant in terms of its presence on television and radio. And I've refused to not only comment on the case, but we're not even allowing the person's name to be mentioned. But Audrey, what do you think?
Professor Haley, I know that we have a very special guest on the show tonight to discuss immigration problems in America. I am so looking forward to hearing Dr. Charles Smith from Texas. But I did want to ask if it is true that you are thinking about at last commenting on the case of our celebrity star, oops, I almost said her name, who is in jail in California. Of course, Mike and Emily and I are eager to hear what you have to say. Mike said he thought you might be going to break the silence on that case. Is there any truth to that, sir?
Well, I think you've been spending a lot of time on that case and trying to prompt me into doing something about it, because it's not Dr. Smith tonight, it's Dr. Williams, but... that's okay. Yes, I think in the next week or two I'm going to be gathering data, and we're going to go with that case full blast, and we'll be expecting comments from you at that time also. Okay, let's go ahead and take a look a little bit at the news here. And Charlie, you're welcome to comment on these things. We always start out with a couple of goofy things. This is kind of an interesting one. Teens sometimes... the farther you get away from teenage years, the crazier they sound. But here's something that's going on in Germany. A teenager in the intensive care unit unplugged his neighbor's life support machine because the noise was keeping him awake. Frederick Molnar, 17, said he had been trying to sleep as he recovered from a car crash, but the noise of a life support machine as it helped 76-year-old Herman Berghoff breathe kept him awake. A police spokesman from Landshut in southern Germany said he told us the noise was getting on his nerves. He thought this was the best way to make sure he got peace and quiet. Luckily, the medical staff were not too far away, and they noticed that the machine was not running. But they have also mentioned in the article that he's going to be speaking with the police as soon as he gets, he's going to get well. Kind of an option, isn't it? Charlie, have you ever had a chance to look at the internet website immigrationcounters.com?
No, sir, I have not.
That's a fascinating site, and what that site does is allow you to actually look at current figures, at least, and they're all from reliable sources because they even tell you the government research organizations that provide these up-to-date sites. But I thought it might be interesting that it says the number of illegal immigrants, and you can see this change, some in seconds, some in minutes. Illegal immigrants in the country tonight are 20,958,475. Goes down through money wired to Mexico since whenever. money wired to Latin America. Cost of social services for illegals in 96. Boy, does that one move fast. As fast as I'm talking, it's changing. Then it talks about children in the schools, et cetera. Number of anchor babies. Those are 2 million now, 18,103. But it's kind of an interesting site, and it's of course it's one that's trying to draw our attention to illegal immigration, but they are all fact-based and they come from government research and watch agencies. So interesting site, immigrationcounters.com, if you've not seen it. Have you had a chance to hear Newt Gingrich's comments this week on YouTube, Tara? Talk about immigration, Newt Gingrich.
Are you talking to me, Professor?
Right. Did you have a chance to hear Newt Gingrich this week? He posted a video on YouTube.
No, sir.
Rare event for him. I thought I might play this here a second and get your comments about it, and then we'll go. We'll just go right into your story.
Okay.
Mohammed Atta and several other 9/11 hijackers were in the United States illegally today, more than 5 years since that tragic day. Our borders remain open to gangs, drug dealers, and terrorists. But instead of protecting the borders, the new McCain-Kennedy immigration plan will put millions of people who are in our country illegally, including potential terrorists and gang members, on a path to U.S. citizenship. This bill does not even allow convicted criminals to be deported. That's wrong. The United States is a nation of immigrants, but our great nation was built upon a foundation of law and order. The rule of law should be non-negotiable. Amnesty makes our laws meaningless and invites millions more to cross the border illegally, making the problem worse, not better. The new McCain-Kennedy immigration plan does not secure our borders, and it does not protect our values. Don't let the Washington politicians compromise our security. Tell them to stop the new McCain-Kennedy immigration plan and secure...
Yeah, I think he's against the bill that's in the Senate right now.
That would be my supposition as well.
You know, I saw in today's news that a federal judge has blocked Farmers Branch, Texas, down there, their new ordinance about forbidding landlords to rent to illegal immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how long that's going to be hung up in court. Would you have any idea?
Well, that's a huge issue down here, and other cities are starting to such as Irving, and are starting to... get in on the getting illegals out of their communities where they can. They're starting to coordinate with the police and with what's called ICE, or Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And what they do is there's a special section of the law of 1996 that it's called a 387G section, where police officers, sheriffs, and state police are trained in immigration matters to the extent that they can actually determine alienage, nationality, and then make a detention or an arrest and notify ICE. So it is a huge issue.
Yeah, I think a couple of the states have done that with their state police, haven't they?
And then yes, sir.
A few locals and some county sheriffs, and we have a sheriff here in Ohio, I think, is trying to do that, or maybe even has people in training at the moment. But I guess if they took everybody that wanted to do this, the federal government wouldn't be able to train them. There'd be so many, I think. But it's interesting. Well, Charlie, if you mind, let me try to give somewhat of an introduction for you tonight. And I know that with the 3 pages of resume that you mailed me, there's no fluff in this resume, that's for sure, folks. He has done it all and thought about it all when it comes to protecting the nation and the nation's borders. But Dr. Williams, he's been a supervisory special agent, retired after 29 years of service with the United States Department of Homeland Security. And, of course, that was formerly U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service in the Department of Justice. He's been, I'm just going to tick off a few things, and then I'm going to let Charlie fill in the blanks. He's been a Border Patrol agent, a criminal investigator, a regional program analyst and intelligence, a deputy assistant regional deportation and detention officer, deputy assistant regional criminal investigator, supervisory special agent in Oklahoma, Supervisory Special Agent in Dallas, per a promotion to Deputy District Director in Dallas, and he's also been the Section Chief in Dallas. And it goes on to describe all the different kinds of events that he's been in. He has a whole page of different kinds of training going all the way back to the Border Patrol Academy in 1975 when he graduated from that. And I think we're looking for Border Patrol agents, aren't we, Charlie?
Yes, sir. Looking for a lot of them. And we're keeping the, as far as I can tell from the media and in informal chats with some of my former colleagues, they're keeping the quality and standards up as well. So it's going to take a little longer to get them on duty, but the caliber will be high enough.
Well, I'm not going to run through all your training, but let me just mention some of these temporary details and promotions you've had. National Anti-Terrorism Program, Cuban-Haitian Coordinator, Supervised Officers in Charge in Lexington, Atlanta, Big Spring, and Latuna, BOP, assigned Attorney General Review Panel, Cuban Parole Board, Deportation Detention Officer, Court Validation Evaluation, Instructor Internal Investigator School, Instructor Counterfeit Fraudulent Altered Documents and Identity Fraud School. I think I've seen some of those altered documents.
Yes, sir.
Conducted internal investigations in Canada, Caribbean, South America, and in Europe. Conducted numerous highly sensitive internal investigations. He was Assistant District Director Investigations. He's been a Deputy District Director. He's been Section Chief Director, and on and on and on. And what I thought I might start out with tonight, if it's all right with you, Charlie, is just to ask you, what was your motivation to get into this line of work? Why did you choose this?
Well, I back in the 70s, when I got out of the military, I knew I had no future unless I went and got an education. So I worked full-time midnight to 8 shift and went to California Polytechnic State University in San Luis Obispo, California. And when I graduated, I started taking tests at government and business and everything, and the first people to show up was the U.S. Border Patrol. And so since they were first, and I had a wife, I was gone.
Yeah.
And so that's how I joined, and that's how I got into, once I was there, and the Border Patrol is the entry position, and it's the uniform division. And I stayed there. I worked in Calexico, El Centro, before I was promoted out of there. So I spent 1974, 75, 76, 77, 78 on the border. So, and that was shift work, was day, evening, and night, and including patrolling the border. You know, your fellow agent or partner is approximately 10, 5, maybe sometimes 20 miles away from you. So you have to be resourceful. You're on your own, especially at nighttime. And the border is in no man's land, as it is today. It hasn't changed. And there's, back then, there was constant gunfire across the border, as there is now. So I can remember one time in downtown Calexico, I was rushed by 27 illegal immigrants from, I don't know, whatever countries. I caught two, because that's all I could handle, and 25 got away. So, but the problem hasn't changed much as far as the border is concerned. I think the Border Patrol is doing a much better job because there's more of them.
Right.
They have more technology, and they have very good morale. Well, there's only one exception, that morale. We could talk about that. That's a side issue. But as far as the border, it really is 25 miles on each side. It's really its own, I want to say, its own little world. It's a no man's land. It's interconnected by family ties, history, social ties, religious ties, and there's many marriages back and forth across the border, and interleaving of families and things like this. So it really and truly is a different part of the world, excuse me, of the United States. But you have to realize that the tension here is that Mexico is a third world country, and they'll probably blast me for saying that, but it is, and the United States is a first world or the superpower. So you have that clash, that tension there that you don't have with Canada.
Right, and that's the source of friction for many people, isn't it? Right.
Yes, sir.
People that haven't been down there on the border just can't imagine it. I don't think they realize how vast it is. You mentioned that you were by yourself on a night shift and your next agent was 20 miles away. I've seen
sometimes.
That.
Yeah.
I've been there at night and I've seen one guy, like the whole evening patrolling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's like one time I was at Monument 221, which is kind of on a hill in out there, and it's west of Calexico. And just past El Central Naval Air Station, where the Navy Air, I can't think of the flyers, the special ones. But I was standing up there at midnight to 8 shift, and I just had my binoculars, and I saw these bright flashes of light from the other side down in the valley, and then I saw some other flashes, and obviously either the smugglers were shooting at each other, or the military was shooting it at other military units or whatever, but that was when I really realized that I had highlighted myself or silhouetted myself, and you learn, and so I got out of there, but I kept a close eye on that. So, and that's typical behavior.
And you folks get pretty good at tracking and reading the desert, don't you?
Yes, sir. I was assigned cutting. It's called sign cutting, and for about two and a half years, I was on we were broken into squads, and the squad would either have the night scope, or they would have the tower where you watch the border, or you'd be out sign cutting, or you'd just be patrolling. It's called desert patrol, and so sign cutting was a specialty we learned. It was easier to track at nighttime than it was daytime. And they used all kinds of tricks. But generally speaking, that was a fun part of the job.
Mm-hmm.
The only bad thing was you had to wear chaps because the sidewinders would bite you. You'd find little wet spots everywhere. And you couldn't find the snake. You forget that. They bury themselves in the sand, and they do not rattle. But then you'd be tracking a group of aliens who had crossed over, and we would use the soles as indicators. Like, for example, we used to call them beetle boots. The boots that the Beatles wore. Or we had Vibram soles, which is like military boots, which has a Vibram-type sole. Or sneakers, deck shoes, cowboy boots. We got to the point where we would know whether the cowboy boot was tipped or not with metal, because it would make a particular indentation in the ground. And then when you look at the tracks, you'd see if any insects or bugs had crawled through them, and that would give you an idea of the time. If they were moist, that would also give you an indicator of the time because of the condensate, or what you want to call it, that comes across. The sand there, because when you step down, you disturb that condensation. Mm-hmm. And then once you have those tracks lined up and you have a good strong track or sole that you can identify, then it's just a matter of running north a couple of miles, and it's what's called cutting sign. There's lights underneath the Jeep. And as you drive real slow, the light would show the indentations or the condensation one or the other. And then you could run another couple of miles north, and then finally you get a fresh track and you get out and you start running until you catch them.
Amazing. This is a job that I think you need to be in pretty good physical shape for, correct?
Yes, sir. And I don't want it to sound too, insensitive, but it was good exercise, and I used to run and chase them. One of the things that I would do is run them down until they were so worn out they wouldn't resist anything. But, of course, you always have to be alert because the drug smugglers, and you would know if they were backpacking because their heels would dig in deeper because of the weight of the pack.
Yes.
And then you knew then that it wasn't just an illegal coming across a bear, okay? They were carrying something. So
right.
They're called mules. They're what they're called is mules.
You learn to read about everything, don't you? In that job.
Well, especially at nighttime, you know.
Man.
You're nighttime's the time you better be alert.
And that desert does live, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, there's tarantulas that'll bite you. There's you know, the snakes. There's just so many things. Bats. And then you have the coyotes. Little bands of coyotes. You always have to worry about them. Wild dogs and things of that nature. So you can run into the cactus and you'll find yourself in real trouble and full of cactus.
Oh, yeah.
So, the conditions are harsh, and you have to be in good shape, and you have to stay alert, even though you might get tired. You stay alert, or you could be dead very quickly.
Sounds great to me. Where do I sign up? Oh, they probably
just call up.
Dr. Wheat, what is the essence of our immigration problem? I mean, take as much time as you like. What's wrong?
Okay, well, yes, we are a nation of immigrants, and we are a nation who believes in the rule of law, but we're also a nation that likes cheap labor, and we also have cheap labor involved in the sectors that are not pleasant to work in: agriculture, meat packing, janitorial services. These kinds of things, and this draws the illegal into the country. Simply is, as I say in my dissertation, it's simply a matter of they're fulfilling a need, because the employer can hire three or four illegals for the price of one legal. And when I was on duty, especially the last 10 years here in Dallas, almost all of our complaints about illegals came from legal resident aliens. Mm-hmm. They're called LAPRs, or lawfully admitted permanent resident aliens.
Uh-huh.
And probably 90% of our calls came from LAPRs. So it's a problem that bothers them as well.
Their complaint was they were taking their jobs?
Yes.
Yeah.
Or they couldn't get a job, and so they would talk to the a lot of the employers don't speak Spanish. They're not fluent in Spanish, and I am. And I've worked undercover as well. One case in Phoenix where a landscaper, which landscaping is one of them, hired me in an undercover capacity to be his foreman. He never knew who I was until, of course, we made the arrest.
Is that right?
But, he was surprised. But the draw is there.
Type of assignment?
Sir?
How common is that type of undercover assignment?
Oh, it's quite common.
Is it really?
Sure.
We never hear about that.
Well, first of all, now that I'm retired, I have a voice. Otherwise, you wouldn't, be talking to me. The thing is that undercover operations are held very, very, held very close to the vest, so to speak. But there's undercover operations, including in foreign countries with the foreign country's knowledge and approval. So ICE, or the former INS, investigations had a very, very long reach. We have an agent or officer in every embassy overseas, and they provide intelligence, and they do background checks on certain political applications or petitions. High-level government officials, foreign government officials, things of that nature. But, there is a lot of undercover work. We also have surveillance and wiretapping and plain old everyday police work surveillance, surveillance of parking lots where maybe in a store or large mall, you'll have a vendor who's providing counterfeit documents in a package. It usually costs about $200. You get a birth certificate, social security card, driver's license, and they're counterfeit, fraudulent, or falsified in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But so you have that kind of surveillance as well, and so it runs the entire gamut of police work except for one thing, and The most difficult investigation, of course, is what we call a baby smuggling, because you can't give a six-month-old baby a gun and a badge or have them work undercover. They can't say, this is not my mama, it's not my daddy, you know. And so that's pretty, those are tough investigations, and they're tough to conduct, simply because you can't use traditional police methods or police investigation methods. To basically break up these baby smuggling rings and things of that nature. So,
you know, we hear almost exclusively about Mexicans and others from Latin America coming across the southern border. But could you tell us a little bit about what happens in terms of folks coming here illegally from other countries? For example, Europe. I've heard that there are 40,000 Irish guys that are illegally.
Yeah.
And How does that happen?
Well, that's usually what they call a visa overstay. And when they overstay their visas, then there's several different non-immigrant visas available. I forget the last count of how many people visit the United States from foreign countries, but it's in multi-millions.
Right.
But they overstay their visas, and they acquire the necessary documents, fraudulently, or counterfeit, or whatever, or by identity theft. And then they basically penetrate the mainstream of America, and they get good jobs and so on and so forth. You know, I arrested people. The last time I checked my records, I arrested people from over 92 countries.
Is that right?
My database, my alien arrest database that I used for my dissertation, the title of my dissertation is An Analysis of the Effects of Interjurisdictional Information Sharing Between Federal and Local Law Enforcement Organizations on Alien Arrests in North Central Texas. And the first, we started a special program here in Dallas, myself and the director came up with the idea called INS Cops. And if y'all should be familiar, I'm sure you all are familiar with the community-oriented policing program.
Yes.
Well, what we did was we did a hybrid of that, and I took 10 agents, and divided up 60 counties and put an agent into those counties full-time and to share information and to work with the sheriffs and arrest people and put them in the county jails. And we have two reports. We have one for the sheriff's department, and then we have one for us. And so I obtained written permission to gather the information so I could evaluate the program. And there's a 22 variables on the arrest data sheet, and from that alien arrest database, it was from 1996 to 2000 inclusive that we did this, and I kept those records, and I have them, and of course they're an exhibit in my dissertation. But what I've done is basically is I have the variables are such like citizenship. The very first arrest we made on INS Cops was from Germany. He was arrested for aggravated assault. He was convicted and sentenced to 24 months, and then he was deported. So I have 2,518 arrests in this alien database, illegal alien arrest database.
Nice. Wow.
And I use that as one of the exhibits. So that gives you an idea what we're doing here. And this is just North Central Texas. Well, the whole point of this thing is when I first came on duty, I noticed that agencies do not share information. And instantly, okay? Back then, they probably didn't have the capability. Now we do. This was brought out in the 9/11 Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not picking on any federal agents or federal agencies. But, we were looking for the hijackers. The FBI was looking for them. CIA was looking for them. Like, for example, in Massawi, if you have an INS agent working with the other federal agencies, they're not required to have a search warrant or an arrest warrant.
Hmm.
All they have to have is reasonable suspicion. So they should have opened up his computer immediately and taken him into custody as well. So, that's just an example. So the thrust of my dissertation is to have or institute instant interjurisdictional information sharing among certain agencies that would allow us to flag or capture the alien. And what I've done is in the dissertation is a list, and I'll read those off to you. These are the 15 that we need, and this is all we need. And what will happen is through attrition, and I'll get to that in a moment, through attrition we'll just eventually dry this problem up. The 15 agencies would be NCIC. If anybody doesn't understand the acronyms I'm going to use, let me know. But okay. NCIC, INLETS, APHIS, CIS, which is the Alien Central Index System, IDENT, or the Automated Biometric Identification System, IBIS, which is the Interagency Border Information System, State Biorecords Systems, State Driver's License Identification Card Systems, which under the Real ID Act of 2005, the states have been mandated by Congress and required to connect instantly all license bureaus. Federal, state, and county prisoner information systems, Medicare, Medicaid, and public health departments, federal home loan organizations, U.S. Social Security Office of the Inspector General, the Internal Revenue Service, and a special liaison officer or department or office, whatever, with the CIA and one with the FBI. And they should be connected instantly. That way, if somebody's identity is stolen and it's used in any of these areas, it'll instantly come up. Mm-hmm. Not only would that protect the public, there's, I think it was like 670,000 people had their identity stolen since 1994 or something like that. And these other security agencies would be alerted as well. Because, see, here's the thing that we all must understand. Illegal aliens are a local, county, state, and federal problem simultaneously.
Yes.
Omar Lucio, who's a sheriff down there in Cameron County, said, once they're here, they're everybody's problem.
Exactly.
And the thing is, I've bought, in an undercover capacity, I bought birth certificates, 5,000 Social Security cards that were counterfeited, naturalization certificates, all kinds of things. So you can see here, by these 15 agencies that I'm proposing, be connected instantly and monitored, it wouldn't affect our concept of federalism and states' rights or the federal umbrella. It would simply be a non-human identifier that would come in. Yes? Yes, sir?
And in contrast, today we have virtually none in terms of this kind of sharing?
No, we still don't have it.
Yeah. Amazing.
We still do not have it. The thing is to have this, let me give you an example. Let's say the news media reports 10 to 20 illegal aliens in the United States, 20 now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that we start a huge enforcement effort using all the federal agencies we can, state and county and local police, and we start making mass arrests, okay? Forget about the court problems and all the other problems that be involved. Let's say that we start this process, and so 5 million leave the United States because they don't be arrested or have a record, okay? We're still left with 5 million. Well, we don't have 5 million jail cells.
Exactly.
And we don't have 5 million ways of prosecuting 5 million people. Now, let's take, for example, that 5 million of them make a home loan. That's a local, county, state, and federal violation. That's fraud. And the site for that is 18 U.S.C. 1001. So now you've got 5 million felonies being committed. Let's say they file income tax. Well, if they're filing income tax, it can't be correct because they're not going to give their real name, date of birth. They don't have a real Social Security number. So now you have a fraudulent tax problem. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that, for example, where does all the money go? And this is something I would like to see studied academically and maybe peer-reviewed. The money for the counterfeit, altered, and falsified Social Security card that the employer reports money on, where does that money go? Who's accounting for that money?
Interesting.
And so these are some of the things. Now, the other thing is jurisdictional problems. One of the big things about the Patriot Act that was so important was that if we got a warrant for, wiretapping of a cell phone, and we got that warrant in New York, and it was a terrorist, we could follow them to Los Angeles if that's where they were going with that warrant. Under the old system, before the Patriot Act, you'd have to get a warrant out of every federal district court system, federal district court along the path of the alien. And that's a 64-page application.
Oh, my.
Huh. And each court would want its own monitoring. So you see the effects of why we need something like that. Well, again, that shows the need for instant interjurisdictional information sharing. And, of course, I'm espousing my own dissertation here and my argument for that. And so I'm partial to it, right?
Yes.
But the thing is if you think about it in terms of this is a problem that we have to settle through attrition, because if we start mass arrests, we're going to have court injunctions. We're going to have some anarchy, I'm sure, and we're going to have maybe some political unrest. About every fifth alien I arrested had a voter registration card. I can't prove that because I don't have an academic study that could be accepted academically, but we seize all the counterfeit and fraudulent documents, and they're sitting in that alien's file. So all those voter cards are there. And to make that an important problem, think of this. If a foreign leader is able to convince a million of his countrymen here in the United States who are here illegally to vote in a particular manner or for a particular candidate, that's a national security problem.
That swings the election, doesn't it? Sure.
Yes, that's a clear and present danger. And you saw that in Orange County, California, which was reported on in the press.
Yeah.
The thing, it's a spurious argument to say that requiring a photo ID for somebody when they're voting, they have a photo ID for everything else.
Right.
So it's a spurious argument. It's just an argument. And what it does is it allows for, of course, fraudulent voting. And there are several cases that have been prosecuted, so you can look those up. See, the thing is these systems, instead of going to Congress, which would not need to do, the president can issue what's called an executive order and connecting all these, mandating all these departments to connect instantly. And the states and the federal government would have to pay the cost. And it could be done through what's called GXML, or Global Extended Markup Language, which has already been developed by the U.S. Department of Justice, National Institutes of Justice. And so it's functional now.
Mm-hmm. That's fraud-proof?
Yes. Yes.
Great.
Now, let me give you two examples aside from 9/11, obviously. For example, in the 9/11 panel, New York PD and New York Fire Department, to this day, do not communicate on a common channel. All right? Look at Maturino Resendez, who was a railroad killer,
mm-hmm.
traveled to the United States and Mexico and through several jurisdictions. He was in our custody, and we were looking for him, and we sent him back to Mexico.
Yes.
Other people were looking for him, and so that's when they decided to come up with IDENT, which is the Automated Biometric Identification System. The problem there is you have to have the alien in custody so he can put his right index or left index finger on a fingerprint reader to call up his record, because you can't use a name or date of birth,
mm-hmm.
because it's never the real one.
And Michelle Malkin in her book Invasion has a nice story about him.
Yes, yes. Well, I worked that case, so with the Texas Rangers and helped them out. So part of that was in Texas. But the thing is, and then federal, state, and county prisoner information systems, the federal government does reimburse the states under what's called the SCAP program, which is a criminal apprehension something. I forget exactly. But they reimburse for those who are in prison who have deportation orders. Now, here's another problem. Deportation orders. Once the alien has had their hearing and they're ordered deported, then they send out a letter to them telling them to come in and surrender. And we call it, in street language, it's called a run letter. So they run. And so we got about 600,000 of them in the United States that we're looking for. And ISIS forms fugitive teams. It's not actually under the detention part of deportation detention section of DHS. But and those people, a lot of them are violent. Then we re-encounter them after they commit local crimes. So
the felons that are released from prison, the felons who are, let's say, Mexican nationals who are released from prison, mm-hmm. are they escorted to the border or home, or are they just told to go home?
They put them on a bus and take them to the border and put them across the border. Okay. We have no authority to go into Mexico because that's a sovereign nation, the same as with Canada.
Yeah.
Now, you can take a dangerous criminal and escort him to the country and turn him over to that country's officials, which I have done. I've done this. You basically hand them over, and we take our handcuffs off and they put their handcuffs on, okay? Because a lot of times they're looking for them as well. And you got to remember the thread behind this of organized crime. You know, it used to be, mostly a national problem. Mm-hmm. Now it's international.
Yeah.
For example, Operation Predator, which we started here when I was still on duty, which was a child pornography ring. And all of a sudden we went from Arlington, Texas, where we first identified it, to a worldwide problem with 250,000 hits.
All right. Oh, my.
And the illegal alien problem is of such a magnitude that, and I know people will disagree with me, but I feel it's a clear and present danger to our society.
I do, too.
I think that we're looking at maybe some anarchy, or anarchy-type indicators. The former assistant commissioner of DHS for ICE, his name was Garcia, we arrested 60 people who were working inside airports, nuclear facilities, air cargo facilities, and those kinds of things. On Operation Rampart, we went to DFW. We arrested 512 people who had airport security badges. We took the magistrates out to the airport, held court out there, and it was just a huge operation.
And,
sir?
512 people?
Over 500.
Unbelievable. Wow.
And that was another thing we had to come to grips with. These companies, they're supposed to have a background investigation by law. And so if they're using a counterfeit identification or social security number and they're working in, like, cleaning airplanes, pumping fuel and stuff like that, they're working inside the areas, then they could be exploited by the terrorists very easily.
Exactly.
As well as drug smugglers and also human traffickers, especially babies, things of that nature. We had another case where we had females come up out of Guatemala and El Salvador and Honduras, and they were working in the bars, and basically the smugglers brought them in and forced them to work bars in Fort Worth and the surrounding area. And we had about 72 ladies from anywhere ranging from 12 to 20, 21 years old, and they were in these conditions. So it's a problem such that it really, if you say illegal alien, you have to think that at a minimum, and of course there is no statute of limitations, it's a continuing violation from day one. And let me add another comment. The word undocumented worker or undocumented alien doesn't exist. The law is 8, United States Code 1325, and it says anyone who enters the United States at other than a port of entry and is admitted to the United States is an illegal alien, punishable by 6 months for the first charge, 2 years for the next charge, and then it goes up from there. If you're an aggravated felon, in other words, narcotics, murder, robbery, domestic abuse, aggravated assault, carjacking, whatever, and you're deported from the United States, if you come back and you're caught, it's 20 years. Don't pass go. Don't collect $200.
Mm. So the the undocumented worker, that's a euphemism for the ones that want to get the amnesty, probably, right?
Well, yeah, that's true, and they're sympathizers. I mean, I had to deal with these groups for 29 years, both pro and anti-immigration, as well as your religious groups, and I'm not picking on anybody's religion, but they get involved as well, and they'll harbor, offer sanctuary. Tucson office conducted an undercover operation in the Catholic Church in, in some early 80s, I believe, and because they were smuggling aliens, and it was the church workers. It wasn't the priest. It wasn't the diocese officials. It was the workers or volunteers who were working there, and they were using the church as a cover. And we never even knew that was going on until one of the people that had been smuggled didn't pay up, and they came to us because they were afraid for their life. So the problem is much more of a dangerous scope than anybody has even talked about. And I need to make a personal comment here, but the 1952 Immigration Act was the last time Congress actually addressed the illegal alien problem. It has not been addressed by Congress since 1952.
Is that right? Oh.
That was called the McCarran-Walters Act. And that was the first time we had criminal penalties for smuggling. And back then it was called SINs, or criminals, immorals, narcotics, subversives, and smugglers. And then they switched as time progressed. And then they started, really understanding that there was more of a problem. We had the law passed in 1986, and then 1990, 1994, 1996, on all these laws. But the problem, it's really Congress. It's not. I've worked for both Democrat and Republican presidents, and it's not the executive branch.
I thought that, right.
It's Congress, and it doesn't matter whether it's Republican or Democrat. They have not addressed it. You know, it's interesting. We can issue 35 to 40 million Social Security checks within 99% accuracy every month. Okay, that's Social Security numbers. But yet we can't get Congress to get together and come up with something to protect not only our values in our society, but also our laws.
It's mind-boggling sometimes. Charlie, we're almost out of time. I can't believe it, and I probably diddled around too much here in the beginning, but let me ask you something that I've never asked anybody. Would you be interested in coming back for another session? Would that be possible?
Of course. I'd be happy to.
Would you want to do it as early as next week?
Well, I can if you wish. No problem. I'm retired until people start giving me jobs. Now that I'm a PhD, so but I'll make myself available. There's no problem there.
We will book you then for the 28th, and we'll come back and I want to get more into the details about your dissertation and your findings, and then of course get your views on this current piece of legislation, and I know you have some. Then I wanted to talk about our two Border Patrol agents that are doing a string of years in prison, I think 10 and 12 years respectively.
Yeah, I have a few comments on that one for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. So if you wouldn't mind, then I'm sure our audience would certainly appreciate it, and I'd be just delighted to have you come back next week, and we'll start out and go right at it.
Well, I'd probably be really good because I've sent you a copy of my dissertation, and you should have it before then.
Beautiful. I'll have time to go over that, and I certainly will.
Yes, sir. Well, share it as you see fit.
Thank you for joining us tonight, Charlie, and we'll see you next week. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Dr. Charles Williams, and he is an expert on the immigration issue in our country, and we're going to have him back next week. So please tune in. Charlie, good night. Thank you very much.
Good night, sir. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, meeting again. So good night, and keep learning.
Again, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue sky drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know? Tell them I won't be long.